The subject that has been suggested is somewhat an involved one, and I do not know how far this would be a very appropriate theme to discuss before an audience of this kind who are basically devotees of God and aspirants of the spiritual ideal of life. However, all visions of life can be consolidated into a system of integrated organization, and nothing conceivable can be regarded as extraneous to the methodology to be adopted in the pursuit of the spiritual ideal. Is there a conflict between the scientific method and the religious aspiration of the soul? Is a moot question. Generally, when people speak of science, the common populace, what they understand is the comfort that has been provided by applied science, such as fast traveling, telephone, telegraph, internet, satellite, television. These are the things that are in the minds of people when they speak of the technological advance science has made. But science does not mean technology. It is a vision of life itself. What clashes or appears to come in conflict with the religion is not the comfort that has been brought to us by these technological inventions of applied science, but the theory of science, which is something very deep and bordering upon philosophical and the metaphysical foundations of life itself. That the world is external to everyone is the basic foundation of all scientific perception. Observation and experiment being the methods of a scientific process, it goes without saying that which is observed and experimented upon has to be outside. The outsideness of the world is a very important aspect to be considered here. But we may put a question to our own selves. Is the world really outside us? So that what happens in the world does not affect us in any way. And the world does not care for what is happening to us in our own internal operations. Is the individual and the world the two principles of consideration here? Are these two segregated from each other? Has the world nothing to do with the individual? And has the individual nothing to do with the world? it looks that there is no communication between the individual and the world possible. The world may not know at all that some individual is dead and gone. And the individual is not concerned in any manner if the star in heaven cools down and extinguishes itself. Let anything happen to the heavens, what does it matter to us? Is it so, is a question. The beginning of this supposed conflict between physical science and religion, the beginnings of these conflicts may be said to have begun somewhere towards the end of the 19th century, when the geocentric interpretation of the heavenly bodies was replaced by the heliocentric concept on the discovery of Copernicus. This discovery clashed with the biblical belief and tradition, which holds that earth is the foundation. The sun and the moon and the stars move around this earth. The second thing that opposed religion as it was understood those days was the world was created according to the biblical tradition some 4,000 years ago. But the scientific discovery declares that the beginning of the world must be traced back to aeons and aeons of time process earlier. And the earth is several millions of years old. This again was a challenge to the medieval concept of religion. But the third one is more important. When Newton discovered the law of gravitation and concluded that everything that is happening in the physical world can be mathematically deduced by the logical process of conclusion drawn from premises. And the world which is physical in its nature is contained within the cup of space and time. When his successor or follower Laplace wrote the 5 volumes of the mechanist's conception of the heavens, the war between science and religion appeared to have commenced. We are told that the writings of Laplace were presented to Napoleon for his consideration. And Napoleon seems to have declared, "Monsieur, I do not see God in your scheme." And the answer of Laplace seems to have been, "Your Highness, I have used the best of telescopes, but I have not found God anywhere." This is classical science. God has to be seen in order to be believed. Does it follow then that whatever we see with our eyes really exists? Can we establish logically or scientifically that the world exists at all? Which scientific procedure can establish the truth of the externality of the world? Science is against any kind of hypothesis. and taking for granted anything unproved. But is there any proof to substantiate the belief that the world exists, except the assertion that it is seen? The senses come in contact with what we call the panorama of the external world. That is the proof. Here science fumbles. It is trying to cut the ground from under its own feet. Taking for granted anything is not the beginning of science. You cannot even take for granted that the world exists unless you prove that it exists. One cannot prove one's own existence even. How do you know that you are existing? Where is the syllogism by which you have deduced the consequence of your existence from a premise? What is the proof that can establish the truth of your own existence? Bring the argument and let us see what it is that tells you that you really exist. It was the French philosopher René Descartes who took up this question of doubting the existence of his own self. Some devil may be working in my mind. It may be telling me everything in a topsy-turvy way. The world may not be there. I may not be there. Everything is doubtful. There is no certainty of anything. I can doubt the validity of anything and everything. But he went deeper into this phenomenon of doubt and discovered that doubt is not possible unless there is someone who is to doubt. If the doubter also is to be doubted, the very fact of doubting loses its meaning. Nobody can be an utter skeptic, because that defeats the very purpose of skepticism. I am thinking and therefore I must be existing. This is Descartes' conclusion. What sort of existence is mine? I am conscious that I am existing. What is that consciousness? I am an individual. I am Mr. So-and-so is my consciousness of existence. Is the consciousness of the existence of a personality a complete acceptance of the truth of life? He concluded that this cannot be the ultimate truth of life, because there is a longing to break the boundaries of personality in everyone. No one can tolerate finitude. The finite consciousness, which is proved by the very fact of my knowing that I am, establishes the validity of there being something which is not finite. What is it that is not the finite? It should not be a multitude of finites. It should be the infinite. My existence as a finite being substantiated by the indubitability of this assertion also brings about a wider unexpected consequence, namely the infinite also should exist. Therefore, God exists. If I am existing, God has to exist. Because the concept of God is only a cosmic correlative of the acceptance of one's own being as a finite individual. The finiteness of individuality proves the infinitude of the truth of life.
this smashes
the erstwhile concept of the externality of the world and the dichotomy that is seen between the perceiver and the perceived. Now I am touching upon the threat that theoretical science poses before religious life. Here it is also necessary to understand what is religion. Though we are trying to analyze the concepts of science in its practical and theoretical aspects, do we know what religion is? Religion basically is a longing for what is above oneself. There is something transcending myself. But for that fact, I would be a most happy person in this world. I would be carefree, secure ultimately, and perfect in every sense of the term. But no one feels that one is perfect. There is always a complaint that something is wrong, something is inadequate, something is insufficient. Finally, there is a threat of extinction of the existence of the individual himself. Death comes upon oneself. These are the fears of the psyche, which have a basis and truthfulness in the sense that they indicate the possibility of the existence of some realm where these secure, insecure conditions are overcome completely. The truths of life seem to be several layers of self-transcendence, one rising above the other, and the lower does not satisfy until the next higher one is reached. We can never be satisfied with anything in this world, because satisfaction cannot arise from that which is totally outside us. The outsideness of the values of life, the objects supposed to bring us satisfaction, defeats the very attempt at acquiring any kind of permanent joy and satisfaction in this world. That from which we seek satisfaction, namely the objects of sense for the matter of that, are incapable of contact by the perceiver because of the fact they are outside. You have already dubbed the world as something totally external to you, unconnected with you, and therefore you can expect nothing from the world. Nevertheless, man runs after the pleasures of life in the form of contact with objects which are totally outside. Here is a contradiction in the very operation of desire itself. It is a self-defeating attempt of what we call human desire. Desire is the longing to possess that which is not within oneself, but which is outside. But the outsideness of the object prevents its coming in contact with the experiencing consciousness. So every desire ends in tragedy, in frustration, utter defeat, and no one ever goes from this world with the satisfaction that the attempt has succeeded. Everything is lost. The whole life has become futile. There is no value and worth in anything in life, is the conclusion by the old man who is about to depart, because he has lived a futile life of pursuing that which you cannot expect in a world that is totally outside. The religious ideal is not based on the concept of the externality of the world, not also the internality of anything.
The world is neither outside us nor is it inside us. We are integrally related to the world, so is the case with the world in respect of our own self. We are not sitting outside the world, we are in the world. Nor also are we inside the world as something contained in a pot. The relationship between the individual and the cosmos is organic relationship. To put it in a more plain way, we may say it is something like the organs of the body getting related to the bodily organism itself. Though the hands and the feet can be perceived by oneself as objects of sense, they do not remain as external objects. They are organic parts of the whole body, which is the transcendence of the limbs. Thus, religion rises above the classical scientific concept of the externality of the world and touches upon what we may call the universal concept of the truth of life. The truth, which is the ultimate aim of the religious pursuit, is an all-comprehensive, universal inclusiveness, and here it does not go hand in hand with the classical physics, which requires the world to be totally outside. The clash between physical science in its classical form and the religious ideal lies in this fact that on one side it is asserted that the fact of life is a universal inclusiveness, on the other side it is asserted that it is totally outside. Later, the theories of science got modified systematically towards the middle of the 20th century, and more considerate and investigative scientists found that it is impossible to know anything unless there is a relationship between the knower and the known. A totally disconnected object, as the world is, cannot be known by any individual consciousness. The involvement of the object of perception in the subjective operation of visualizing is necessary in order that perception can take place at all. There must be an end rapport between the perceiving consciousness and the perceived object. The two stand parallel to each other. Neither the world is above the individual nor the individual above the world. They are coeval in time and space. So we are of the same stuff as the world is made of. And we are living in a realm which is just the physical realm of the five elements. The world is a constitution of the five physical elements: earth, water, fire, air and ether. Also are the building bricks of the individual body. The very substance of our physical existence is the same as the substance of the physical world. The building bricks of the cosmos are the building bricks of our own personality. Then, if that is the case, what it is that makes us feel that we are totally different from the world? It is an interference of a peculiar unintelligible phenomenon called space and time. Though classical physics considered from the point of view of Newton that space and time have nothing to do with the contents of the world, it was later discovered that space and time are vitally connected with every physical event in the world. It is that tightly open sense that we hear of the evolutionary process of the cosmos. Tasmadva atmana akasha sambhuta. From the universal absolute selfhood of the cosmos, space emanated. Now we must realize that there is even space as a connection with the supreme absolute. Akashad vayu, the principle of air emanated from the vibrations of space. Vayu agni, friction created by the movement of air created heat, which is fire. Agni rapaha, the condensation of the heat of fire produced the liquid condition of the world, which is water. The solidification of water became earth principle. Agni rapa adhya prithivi, prithivya oshadaya. From the earth arise all plantations and trees which are the foodstuff of animals and human beings. Oladibhyo annam, all that we eat arises from the plants and trees and vegetables and such conceivable articles produced by the earth. Anna purushaha, the human being arises as the last comer in the process of evolution. This physical body is annamaya, constituted the foodstuff, which is the earth principle, which again is a revolutionary consequence of the water principle, that again of the fire principle, the fire principle from the air principle from the space principle rooted in the universal existence. So you can know your connection with the ultimate reality. We are sunk deep in the ultimate being. We are an automatic evolute in the lowest form of its expression, in its physical material form, which is the spatio-temporal expression of the non-spatial and non-temporal supreme being, which is ultimate consciousness, satyam, jnanam, anandam, brahma. Lofty is this concept. Today, the more understanding type of physical scientists have practically stumbled upon this great concept of the Upanishads. Mathematicians who declared that the world is only equations, mathematical point events, and airy waves of probability, a continuum of some indescribable stuff which is incapable of description, have inadvertently been forced to accept that. This conclusion should be drawn by the consciousness of the scientist himself. The greatest of scientists, Sir Arthur Eddington, who would never accept that there is God or such a thing as consciousness, fell upon this acceptance inadvertently, unconsciously as it were, and in his great book, The Nature of the Physical World, he utters a gospel truth: the stuff of the world is consciousness, to the shock of all scientists. So science misunderstood is a threat to religion. If you consider it as only a technological process of flying with great speed and working through satellite, television and internet, that would be a poor concept of science. Science is a noble investigative procedure which can take us to the depths of the secrets of life if and dispassionately we go with it. Here is a great unexpected discovery of science, that the stuff of the world has to be consciousness. Why is it so? Because the world has to be known in order that it may be accepted to exist. Who is telling you that the world is existing? Your consciousness is telling. How does the consciousness know that the world is existing? Unless this consciousness is pervading the world of perception. The imbibition of the very structure of the physical world into the structure of consciousness is the reason why we believe in the existence of the world and that it is ours. So there is finally no conflict between the highest discoveries of science and the noble aspirations of religion. By religion we are not to understand Hinduism, Christianity, Buddhism, Judaism, thatism and all that. These are all designated denominational forms of the very meaning of religion. Religion is the aspiration of the soul for its ultimate destiny. It is a search of the individual for the absolute. It is a longing of the spirit within us for God Almighty. It has nothing to do with any ism. And no one can be free from this eternal longing for perfection, which may better be called spiritual aspiration rather than a religious longing, because of the abuse of the word religion in modern times, in historical circumstances, in studies in schools and colleges, etc. People who are now considering themselves as scientists and very advanced in logical thinking, poo-poo religion, thinking this is an old grandmother's story, because their idea of religion is so poor as it is their concept of science. There is a tragedy that has befallen every one of us in our not being able to be precise in our knowledge of things, whether it is scientific or religious. There is no conflict. There was a time in the Middle Ages that when the physical science appeared to be clashing with the theological doctrines of the church, and the church excommunicated many scientists, and they were punished with severe indictments from the Pope, and Inquisition was set up during the Middle Ages, for us very unthinkable indeed. Christians were burnt, thrown into the flames by dogmatic religious followers, and science retaliated and discredited itself from the papal bulls, whatever they be. But today we are in a different world altogether. The conflict has ceased. At least it is appearing to be ceasing. Though it was once upon time said that the East is East and West is West and twain shall never meet, I think today it is attempting to come together and meeting. The West and the East wish to shake hands with each other and accept their common heritage of human beings rather than Westerners and Easterners. scientists and religious scholars, seekers of God and seekers of material values. This is a deep subject. There are several textbooks written these days where powerful monographs written on the subject have gone into the depths of this harmony that is already existing between the external and the universal. Though the external may be different from the internal, it cannot be external to the universal. The universal is a transcendent element which rises above both the subjective side and the objective side. We cannot even know that there is anything outside us unless there is a third element which is not ourselves and not the object that is perceived also. Because of the externality of the object of perception and the internality of consciousness, there is no connection between the two, and knowledge is impossible. No one can know that anything is. But there is a transcendent principle. Eastern thought considers it as the subjective side is called Adhyatma, the objective is Adhibhuta, and the transcendent one is Adhidaiva. All the three have to work together in order that there may be perception at all. But we are so poor in our understanding that we know little of ourselves and much less of the world, but nothing at all of this transcendent operation. Gods are behind our eyes and ears, our nose and tongue, our sensations. These gods, which are the denizens of heaven, are the operators of this mechanism called the physical body with its sense organs. It is a great presumption on the part of an egoistic individual to think that he or she is working. The workers are the great divine beings which are transcendent Adhidevas, gods in heaven, as you call it, but they are invisible. They are invisible because they are neither inside nor outside. They are above. Here is a pathfinding direction for both science and religion, so that if they work together in harmony, they can create a world of joy and the satisfaction that life is worth living. Do you want to depart from this world with the tragic feeling that nothing has been achieved? The world has eluded the grasp of everybody. Kings have come, empires rose and fell, and the earth has not changed. It appears to be so because of our wrong evaluation of the historical process. The historical process actually is a natural process of the cosmos. It is a total operation taking place in the whole of creation. Even when a little event is taking place somewhere in the corner of the world. Our learned speaker, Lieutenant General Zaff, mentioned about the quantum mechanics and the discoveries of relativity, etc., which highlighted the astounding truth of sudden and simultaneous action taking place in the universe. Every event is a simultaneous event. It is not taking place yesterday and tomorrow. It is just now everywhere. Did not the poet tell us, you cannot touch the petals of a flower in your garden without disturbing the stars in the heavens? It is not poetry. It is the truth. Every event is a universal event. Anything that is taking place anywhere takes place everywhere. And we are living in throughout the universe, in all parts of cosmos. Our individuality is not confined merely to this earth planet. It is everywhere in different parts. Scientists today have discovered the possibility of worlds within worlds and the possibility of many worlds and our being inhabitants of all these worlds simultaneously. The simultaneously is the word here underlined. We are not inhabiting these many worlds in succession, today here, tomorrow somewhere, at once and stroke in a timeless manner. We inhabited the whole cosmos and we are world citizens working in different forms, unknown to our own selves. One part of ourselves is here on this earth performing activities in this way. Another part of our own archetypal nature is in heaven even today. Our higher self in heaven is pulling us and summoning us. Come on, you are not here where you are appearing to be there. You are in the heavens. That's why we are longing for the higher values of life. And we can never be satisfied, always unsatisfied, because we are not in this world. We are really in some other world. Not only in some other world, we are in all the worlds. This operation of the universal inhabitants of individuals, so-called, is a great discovery of modern science, which is quite different from that science which appears to be in conflict with religion. Science has become spirituality. Physics has become metaphysics. This is a wonder. Towards the end of the 20th century, we are seeing, we believe that God shall come. The kingdom of heaven is within us. It is within us because it is everywhere. How can a large kingdom be contained within our little frame of physical existence? Because the inwardness of our existence is not actually the physical inwardness. The whole universe can be within us. It is the Sandhogya Upanishad that tells us whatever is happening in the outside world is happening within us. If the sun is shining there, it is shining inside also. If it is hot outside, it is hot inside also. If it is raining outside, it is raining inside also. If there is thunder there, it is thunder here also. But we are so stupid that we cannot realize these events taking place within us, commensurate with all the things that are happening outside in the world. We are the world. Thus, the great discovery of science today tells us. This is what the great Yoga Vasistha scripture tells us. This is what the Upanishads tell us. So, it is not merely the twain of West and East that are meeting together. God and man are shaking hands with each other in this vast kingdom of universal creation. Blessedness shall be our future. All shall be well. It is our duty to be happy always. Never complain. Never be in a melancholy mood. Don't curse. Don't condemn. Don't hate. These things have no meaning in this great universal inclusiveness of life, proved scientifically as well as by the aspirations of the individual within. All shall be well. Hari Om Tat Sat.